You're gonna need 5 minutes to reset.
I might. All right, welcome to another edition of the Beer Opinions Podcast. I am Pat Berger, owner of Kaiser Tiger and Patty Longs, and with me, as always, is Bruce White of the Chicagoland Beer Tours.
All right, hey, happy holidays, almost happy new year. Got those resolutions ready to go?
Yeah, this is our post-Christmas edition in between Christmas and New Year's. Hopefully soon these holidays will be over and we'll be back to regular business. You know, I just don't like anything that disrupts business, Bruce.
I know, you're a businessman.
I know. Yeah. We're closed for 2 days. It's nice. It's very nice being closed for 2 days. But, you know, you don't make money being closed.
Yeah, that's right. You know, who's gonna buy all that beer? Somebody needs to drink it.
Somebody needs to sell it. That's where I fit in. We have a wonderful edition today. We're going to go off the topic of beer for once. Don't worry. This isn't going to be about baseball or politics. It's going to be about cider.
Yeah, which is a New Year's resolution of mine is to drink more cider this year. So this is perfect.
It's nice to have lofty goals. So without ado, our guests today are the husband and wife duo behind Right Bee Cider, Chicago's only and first cidery, and Charlie and Katie, a wonderful couple who I have had the pleasure to know since day one of their cidery, and we love their product. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for having us.
My fantastic. Pleasure.
Yeah.
A little cold, but okay.
It is. Yeah, we're
surviving.
Yeah, high at 9 today, I think. But great curling weather.
Cider drinking weather.
Cider drinking weather.
Yeah, the ice is nice and crisp on the curling courts today.
Oh, it's like magic. So, first cidery in Chicago. It's surprising, I think, to me personally. You know, maybe you guys could tell us a little bit about your story and how you started. It's a fun little tale.
Okay. Well, when Charlie and I first met in 2011, he was a professional brewer at the time and noticed that I wasn't drinking beer and thought I was a little crazy. But I love cider. I had been exposed to cider in the UK and couldn't really find anything that I liked back here that reminded me of that. So he surprised me for my birthday with an unmarked bottle of some mysterious liquid that I was nervous I was going to have to act like I liked.
Just like three X's on it.
We were just hoping it didn't turn you blind.
Yes. So he made me a hard cider for my birthday, and it was perfect. It was nice and light and crisp. I like ciders on the drier end, and it was exactly what I preferred. And then we started dating shortly after that and got married pretty quickly after that, and then had our release party 6 months after our wedding in 2014. So we've been very busy the past couple years.
No doubt. What, you know, what clicked it for you, Charlie, that you could start a cidery? Because I knew you as a brewer. I knew your dad first, actually. He was a regular at Patty Long's while your mom would get her hair done down the street. He'd come in and, you know, he was, reminded me of my dad. He was very into beer and, you know, always talked about how his son was a home brewer and how he had to bring him in. And, but you know, you were hardcore on the trail of beer. You know, was it just to impress this girl? Is that the only reason you
pretty
got into
much? Cider? Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's
as good a reason as any, really.
I mean, yeah, it's, you know.
Yeah, I had never really given much thought to cider. I never really consumed much cider. I tried it, and just like most people, my introduction to cider was a really sugary, sweet, you know, syrupy, sweet ciders that are, you know, really mainstream ciders. And so I didn't really have an appreciation for cider because I didn't really understand that, you know, a lot of people now, that there are a million different types of cider from all over the world. And you can find a cider that you like if the first one you try isn't to your, you know, to your palate or whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot more variety in the cider world than people realize, huh?
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Yeah,
quite a bit.
You can play with apple varietals, yeast strains, different, you know, fermentation procedures, and all these different things can change the outcome of the cider, just like beer, or wine or anything like that. But yeah, my background's in beer brewing, and I had always, I brewed beer, and the beer industry is the only industry I've ever worked in my entire professional career since graduating college. And even when I was in college, I was working in the beer industry, whether it was legal, whether I was of legal drinking age or not.
Well, you were legal making age. Yeah, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I was legal. I could wear a t-shirt that had, you know, a brewery on it or something.
College kids drink beer?
Apparently, yes.
Oh my gosh. Scandalous. Scandalous.
But so my first job out of college was working for Pabst Brewing Company. I was on the marketing team. I was a marketing intern. And Pabst...
Congrats, by the way. The marketing at Pabst. It's like...
Thanks, yeah. It was all me. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
You don't have enough tattoos to be on the marketing team at Pabst.
Well, it was interesting because the environment was really like pretty, you know, it was
buttoned up.
Yeah, yeah. I'd wear like business casual to the office every day and... It wasn't what you would expect.
Because they really, I mean, they made their mark like getting like, you know, hip, cool, tattooed, cool kids to go to bars and buy PBRs for people.
Yeah.
And that was the big plant. That was the push, right?
Yep. And it was very calculated and it worked. And they took that approach, you know, and they brought it into Schlitz and with a throwback can and everything like that. And now they're kind of going through all the heritage brands and you'll see them start to pop up. Like Hams is big now and everything.
Hams is getting massive, yeah. It's the new PBR.
So they sold that company. They moved it out to L.A. And I was low-hanging fruit, so I was like the first to go. And I was like, I'm going to start my own brewery. And then I went, you know, put pen to paper, and I was like, I know nothing about starting a brewery. And so step one, get a job in a brewery. And I started... assistant brewing in Crown Point, Indiana. I was an assistant brewer, and I worked in the tap room. I worked with Stevie Mazaluski.
Stevie Mazaluski, yes. Yeah. Stevie and I go way back to the mid-90s. We worked together at River West Brew Pub.
Amazing.
Yes, Stevie's a great guy.
Yeah, and it's fun meeting Steve because you kind of peel back the layers of this Chicago beer history. Where it's like all these people worked at the Wine Keller, and that's where Steve worked, and then River North, and then it's just this migration of all these people that have been in the industry.
The party was last week. I got a call. There's an annual party, a get together of all the ex employees of River West and Wine and Keller, where the brew pubs, all owned by a German man, Udo, and it's. Affectionately called the I Hate Udo Party. It's at Delilah's every year, but I did not know it was going on. I got a call from the owner of Delilah's going, get down here, this party's going on. Stevie Mazaluski's coming. And that almost got me in the car, but I was already home. And as it turned out, Stevie did not show up, so I don't feel too bad. But everyone from, you know, Greg Brown, who's been on the podcast, worked there. Nick Floyd of Three Floyds Brewing worked there.
Obviously Mike Miller of Delilah's.
Mike Miller of Delilah's worked there. Yeah. You know, back then there weren't many choices. So it was either worked for him or Goose Island.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. But anyway.
Or both. Most people worked for both.
Both. Yeah. Long story short, I wanted to start a brewery. So I started at the bottom and I worked my way up, and it was assistant brewer, tap room worker, and then it was shift brewer, and then it was head brewer. I even moved out to Columbus, Ohio for a couple of years to help start a brewery out there because this is what I wanted to do. Meanwhile, you know, all these hundreds of breweries are popping up left and right. I'm like, who's starting? Who? I don't know. I don't know that person. Like, I don't know. Where did they brew before? You know,
can see the ship sailing, right?
Yeah. And I still love beer. I still love to drink beer, but I always wanted to start a brewery, and I never really had like that call to action, that thing where it was like this revelation where either I have a product that is really going to completely differentiate us, or a brand name that's completely going to differentiate us, or whatever. And we, Katie and I, we both kind of wanted to branch out and really go out of our comfort zone. And we kept coming back to the cider that I made her, and the fact that nobody in Chicago was doing that. And the fact that it was a wholesome, true story, and there was substance behind it. And we just kind of kept coming back to it. And one day Katie was like, I have a name for it. I think it'll work. She's like, it's called Right B Cider. I was like, Right B Cider. She's like, yeah, we put a little B on the logo, and it's like a play on words, like right beside her. I was like, all right. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, that is...
it's because he didn't get it. Yeah. Sometimes he's slow.
I'll be honest, I didn't get it for a while, but it is totes adorbs.
Let's face it. I read it and I was like, oh, that is... Isn't that what the kids say?
Totes adorbs. Yeah.
Just to clarify for all the listeners, right beside her sounds like right beside her.
Right beside her.
Yes, because... Yeah. Charlie used the cider to trick me into marrying him, and it worked. And here we are.
I mean, that's a good testament to the product itself, right?
Like, sure.
That's great. No, I love that story. I cannot wait. My girlfriend will eat that up, and then she'll be like, why don't you make me anything? And I'll say, because I don't know how.
In your defense, that was like the last romantic thing I think I've done for Katie. So
I can vouch for that.
Don't worry about it. Don't sweat it.
It's all downhill from there.
And also, I've come around on the name since our initial conversation, just to clarify on that as well.
It's a good name. It's a good name. Yes. And the fact that you guys use honey in the back sweetening of the cider, right? Yes.
Yeah, so. We work with The Hive. They're a beekeeping supply store, and they also do a lot of classes that teach people how to keep their own bees, and you can buy equipment from them and everything. And this guy, Naaman Gamble, he's just an all-around good guy.
He's incredible.
And he set up a bunch of hives on our roof, so he comes and manages them for us, and we use the honey from our roof, and then anything that we can't get from those hives, we supplement with honey from around the city of Chicago. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, that is very cool.
Where is the hive located? Is it, or does he, do you know, or?
It's on,
I can always look it up.
It's on Roosevelt, I believe.
Okay.
But then he sets them up all over the city, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he has hives at O'Hare Airport, out in parks in the suburbs, on rooftops, throughout the city, so...
What happens to the hive in this 9-degree weather we have today? Do they just hang out in they just don't fly around?
No, yeah, they kind of do their own version of hibernation. Naaman goes around and he insulates and winterizes the hive, so he'll actually feed the bees with a complex like sugar, basically, that they metabolize over a long period of time.
Uh-huh.
And the bee, and he insulates the hives, and limits their access in and out, so there's not a whole lot of air getting in. And then the bees actually help by insulating the hives with like a wax, basically. And they also huddle together and vibrate so that it creates their own heat. And then they rotate who goes to the center of the hive and who stays on the outside. So. They're pretty smart.
Much like the rest of Chicago is doing in winter.
In the supplement bar for Hive. And,
supplement. Really, insert patty lawns for beehive, yeah.
Bees are fascinating, aren't they? People get really into them. But they're also incredibly important to the environment, right? They're a key member of the chain.
And they've been
chain.
Like taking a hit lately, so this is neat that they're supporting that.
Yeah, and it's suffice to say, is that the right... term anyway.
It doesn't matter. It's
smart.
Beer opinion.
I'm trying to sound smart because there's a microphone.
There's two rules to this podcast: one, facts are irrelevant; two, no one's listening.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
they're like, "Wait a minute, no one's listening. What are we here for?"
It goes without saying that if there were no bees, there would be no apple trees. So bees are a huge pollinator. So we credit a lot of our business on them. Because if we didn't have bees, we wouldn't have apples. We didn't have apples, we wouldn't have delicious ripe bee cider. So, bees are important.
Yeah, I saw the bee movie. They're coming after us. They want their honey back.
So you guys started in 2014. Is that
yes.
when you actually started commercially? And how did that process work? Is it very similar to kind of starting a small brewery, or is there substantial differences? Or
there's a lot of similarities and differences. Yeah. The distribution model is the same. So
okay.
We and a lot of the equipment is the same. So it translates from brewing to cider making very well. But the fact is there are a lot of differences, and we've had our fair share of issues over the last 3 years. And if I didn't know how to commercially make beer first, I don't think we'd be in business still, because it's just so much different, and the product is just so finicky. It's so hard to get consistent and correct every single time. So I think that's the biggest difference is.
Yeah, because you're working, it's much more of an agriculture. I mean, even though beer is made with agricultural products, it is, it's kind of down to a science. You buy this malt, you know everything about it, you know all the specs. You can get the same exact kind of malt every time. Hops are similar. But with the juice, it's up to the orchard.
And, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just like wine. Some vintages are better than others. Is that true?
Absolutely. And we work with a mill, and we source from a number of different orchards. So throughout the year, our blend could change and everything like that. So then we're really throwing a curveball. And you're right. Like, a lot of breweries are getting their malt from a supplier, and they're
a lot of them are getting it from the same supplier.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. You know, let's face it.
And they have spec sheets that tell you exactly what the yield is on them and everything like that. And if they have a problem, guess what? They turn to the brewer down the street or call up the guy next door and say, "Hey, I'm having this problem. There's nobody else in Chicago doing this. I didn't have anybody. I had to figure all of this out on my own." Meanwhile, you have all these breweries that are established and pumping out very consistent product, and we were having consistency issues, and people were like, "Why don't you know what you're doing?" I'm like, "It's different. It's not beer. It's cider." You know, so it's come with that big challenge. But
sure. And just for the kind of layman listening, hi Dad, I love you. the main difference between beer and cider, and correct me because I'm sure there's, but it's really ingredients. So beer, you have your water, malted barley, hops, and yeast in its simplest form, and then cider, you're swapping out the hop or the malted barley and the hops, right, for basically juice from apples.
Right. Yeah, right? I liken it to winemaking, but instead of grapes, we use apples.
Yep. So it's a different product, but same idea. You're using fermentation to kind of ferment a sugar that's in this case from apples, mostly. So
yeah.
I'll tell you what struck me the first time I went by the cidery was like, oh, Charlie's smart. You don't need a mash tun. You don't need a lauter tun. You don't even need a kettle, right?
Right.
You don't boil anything.
Right. Yeah.
So like, it's some major stainless you didn't have to purchase. I mean, it's just kind of fermenters and bright tanks.
Yeah.
Are the main equipment, and that's it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's...
And you guys just started with, like, one fermenter and one bright, right?
We started with four 250-gallon plastic totes that we would heat with household space heaters. That's what the first batches were made with. So when we...
Just to try to control the temperature of the juice, you were using space heaters?
Yeah. And so there was really no way to tell the exact temperature of the liquid, because we just got little thermometers from Lowe's and had them around the room. And then, you know, our first batches were being made at the end of the summer. You know, our release party was in November. So, you know, everything worked out really well the first time because it was easy to manage the fermentation. But then Chicago winter, and then there was a time where we blew the fuse from the space heaters and the yeast died, and then we had to dump 500 gallons in the alley in February in the middle of winter. Or we used, I don't know if we ever took any pictures because it was a little traumatizing, but we had this insulation that we created around, it was like I was taping bubble wrap, you know, aluminum foil and bubble wrap to the doors, putting blankets underneath the molding to try to keep the room warm. And it was, I mean, a lot of those are procedure at that time. lent itself to some inconsistencies, but it's not because we didn't know we needed other equipment. We just at that time didn't have investors. We were using our personal savings. We knew we needed other equipment. We just couldn't purchase it at that time.
And believe it or not, Katie's a nurse. She's a cardiac nurse, and I'm a brewer. So we didn't have like a, you know, a stockpile of millions cash. Of dollars yeah. sitting around ready to go when we wanted to start this company. Yeah, but right. we used what we had and we did what we could. So.
Yeah. And you've come a long way. You got a new location, a lot of new equipment.
Yes.
And, you know, it's been nice to watch it grow.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love it. I was like kind of poking around the website and everything, and the website's great. And I think that the... It comes through kind of that story of, hey, we're entrepreneurs. And I always respect people who don't have a, you know, the bank of mom and dad per se to kind of start their businesses and have to bootstrap it, which is what it sounds like you guys have had to do and had success. It's going to probably work out in the long term to be even better because you're going to have that kind of pressure that you've had to deal with as you've grown this business.
Absolutely.
So. There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, since you know, we've had friends and family that believe, people that believe in us, which has helped us, you know, friends, family, and fools, as they say, that has helped us grow into the space that we have now. But Katie and I talk about this a lot, and we're like, thank God we weren't bigger than we were when we made the mistakes that we did. Thank God.
We made a lot of mistakes.
And you can make them when you were small enough that they weren't.
Nobody even, there are probably a million people in Chicago that have no idea that we even exist still. So, you know, the fact that we could make these mistakes and be as small as we were and have people like Pat that were so supportive and refused to take us off tap. It was really inspiring. So,
To be totally honest with you, when you said, oh, I'm doing the cider and everything, I was kind of like, oh, okay, and you're like, will you put me on tap? I said, of course I will. You're a friend. I'll put you on tap. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, I'll do a keg. And, you know, when it's terrible, I'll make some excuse not to put it back on. But it wasn't. I mean, the first keg we got was delicious. It really was. And it was a hit, not just with, you know, me, but with the clientele. You know, people still come in here. Just to get right B. So, you know, I think we both lucked out in that regard. You know, me not having to, you know, put you down, say, hey, sorry, it wasn't up to snuff. I'm not buying another one. And, it made me believe in the product enough to work through any issues with you that you had, you know.
Cool.
Very proud to see it happen. I really am. I think it's,
thank you.
I think it's been a great... Yeah. Great thing. And I got to make a cider with you.
Yes.
Was Pat up on the ladder again?
It was the same one. Yeah.
The infamous ladder.
The infamous ladder.
Gained so much traction.
I mean, there were many brewers in Chicago just waiting to make fun of me. There's a video on Facebook of me on this ladder pouring blueberries into a fermenter at Right B. And, you know, I'm a... large man and not the most nimble, and the ladder was not placed correctly. I'm going to blame it on the placement.
In your defense,
of the ladder.
I think it was probably my fault. The ladder was a couple feet too far away from the.
You know, I agree with you. It was your fault, and made for a good video though, and our cider turned out fantastic.
Yes, yeah. So the cider. The cider is just our dry cider with delicious blueberries from Roger Brothers Farms in Southwest Michigan. We got them actually from the Logan Square Farmers Market. And we just threw blueberries in there and crossed our fingers. I believe the conversation we had was, you know, how bad could it be?
Yeah. once again, no one really asked about it either. But, you know, I was going off what I knew. Goose Island does when they add fruit to beer, and you were going off of, I guess, whatever I was emailing you, you know, because we were like, should we crush it? Should we do this? No, Goose doesn't do that. They just throw it in a hole. Let's just throw it, you know. It was, just a total experiment, but it turned out great. And, you know, we back sweetened just a little bit And I drank a ton of it. It's still, I think it's gone here at Kaiser, but it's still on tap at Patty's.
There must be a little left here because I had a little sample right before.
Oh, there is. Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, good. Yeah, yeah. All right.
So I have a full, the kind of original romantic beer or cider in front of me, which is delicious. And then I had a sample of the blueberry, which I thought was fantastic. I think a lot of times when I think of blueberries being added to either a beer or a cider, it can be too sweet, but I thought this one was real nice. It's not overly sweet, which I thought was fantastic. So
yeah, none of our ciders are super sweet. It's fine if people prefer that. We just personally don't prefer to consume cider like that, so none of the ciders that we make are. Yeah. And we find them to be nice and light, refreshing, and especially the blueberry has a beautiful color. A lot of people, like you, assume it's going to be much sweeter than it is, and I think they're pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. And I was hoping to talk about that just for a little bit, because sure. I bet a lot of people, when I talk about cider, they will assume it's kind of their experience with cider, which is, in the United States, quite sweet a lot of times. And I'll be totally honest, I don't know a ton about it. So I was going to open it up and be like, what do you mean when you say kind of dry ciders versus the macro sweet ciders and that sort of thing, and maybe get into that
sure.
a little bit.
Yeah.
So we make dry cider. So that basically when you press apples, you get apple juice, and that juice has sugar in it. And what we do is we add yeast, and the yeast metabolizes that sugar and turns it into ethanol. Alcohol. So since it turns it into alcohol, there's no residual sugar, and that produces a dry.
What kind of yeast are you guys using? What's the house yeast?
We use a champagne style yeast for ours. So it's it works at a wide variety of temperatures. It can metabolize a large amount of sugar. I think it's like up to 15%. Our cider is about 6%, but it can. You can go bonkers if you want it to. So it ferments it completely dry. So there's zero, sugar.
It loves that, the sugar in apple juice, right? I mean, that's a simple sugar that just, you know, it'll eat it all day, right?
Yes. And that was what I thought as well when I first started making cider. But it actually, the yeast needs a lot of other vitamins and minerals in order to not just metabolize the sugar, which it can do, but do it in a healthy way that gives it a healthy fermentation for the, you know, the 2-week duration. But yeah, I mean, it loves the sugar, and that's why shelf stability with ciders is very tricky and everything like that too. But ours, yeah, is dry, so less sugar, I guess, is to answer your question.
But you're not alone at all. It's been a huge educational struggle for us, even at, you know, when we still do a lot of beer fests now, but when we first started, we were doing them all the time. We were self-distributing, and I could see people say, no, I'm not a cider person. It's too sweet. And I would go in the crowd and find them, just be like, just try it. It's not, ours isn't. And they would try it. They'd be pleasantly surprised. So it's funny, you know, some people, I think it is changing a lot, mm-hmm. but you have people that know that there are different kinds of wine and know that there are different kinds of beer, but cider was just this all-encompassing term. And we've been struggling. We still struggle with that when I do tastings all over the state. I have to explain before they try it that cider doesn't actually have to be overly sweet. And sometimes it takes a little bit of encouragement for people to sample it.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I know, I don't know about you, Pat, but I know that that's been something that I've been trying to educate myself on and also educate others. So that's great.
But yeah, I guess, and then to that point, like if you do have a sweet cider, there are a million different ways to make it sweet. You can stop the fermentation prematurely so that there's residual sugars in it. You can back sweeten it, which is adding sugar or honey or juice or concentrate or high fructose corn syrup or whatever you want to put in there. And then adding that back. And you'll find that a lot of mainstream ciders are super sweet, and they have 20 to 30 grams of sugar per
bottle. In a
bottle.
And ours has, our semi-dry has less than 3. The dry has none.
Wow.
No added at all. And okay. I'm not sure what the blueberry has. I don't think we didn't.
It's probably somewhere in between those two. So
yeah.
Probably good for a diabetic, the dry, huh?
Yeah.
And gluten-free.
Yep.
Right.
Every cider we make is gluten-free.
Yep.
Nothing artificial added whatsoever.
Yep. And have so I kind of the growth of I was doing some research in terms of the growth of the cider industry here in the U.S., which is still relative to beer, still quite small, but mm-hmm. is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed kind of the impacts in the last 3 years in terms of your business here, maybe in Chicago, and then any other trends you've kind of noticed there?
Absolutely. And to that point, Chicago is the fastest growing cider market in the country. And I think
for craft cider.
For craft cider, that's right. Yep. I think a lot of that has to do with that, you know, just other people from other cities or states sending their cider to Chicago because it's a big market and they can push a lot of volume that way. But also, yeah, the craft cider market is overwhelmingly growing right now.
How do they define craft cider?
Yeah.
that's actually a good question.
I mean, is that a real term that someone is
It is. I think it's
regulations on
once they there's a cider association, and Nielsen is starting to gather a lot of data about the cider industry right now. So I think that when you talk about craft or regional cideries, it's basically just peeling back those big like the top three or four that you know about. So it'd be Vermont, which is Woodchuck, and then like
Angry Orchard,
which is Boston mm-hmm. Beer.
So Sam Adams is kind of the big guy when it comes to cider.
They haven't changed the rules for Angry Orchard like they did for Sam Adams. Sam gets included in craft beer numbers.
Sure.
But Angry Orchard doesn't.
They do. But I think that the Cider Association can manipulate that number if they say, okay, Angry Orchard is the biggest.
They removed the top three or four biggest.
They're the biggest in the world now?
Well, I mean, I don't know. They're the biggest in the United States. I know that.
Remember, facts don't matter.
Our motto is
We don't have that graph in front of us right now.
Listeners, don't Google that. Just go with it.
We learned this at CiderCon in Chicago last year, and we're really happy to see that data because a lot of people, especially when we go to meetings with our chain retailers, they're like, well, cider's stagnant, it's not growing. And we're like, actually, if you look at smaller companies, you know, people are looking for local, they're looking for smaller, they're looking for, you know, other options. And we were excited to see that, especially in Chicago, that interest is still high and is growing.
Yeah, so stagnant with those top three or four, it's either you know, not growing or slightly down. And then if you peel back those layers, the craft and the regional cideries are up about 40%. And it's the fastest growing alcohol segment.
Yeah.
I mean, Angry Orchard was a juggernaut. They were up, but they're not anymore.
I'm not sure what their numbers are, but I think it's just, probably a saturation thing as well.
It looked like a hit. I was looking at some graphs online and who knows how accurate these things are.
Yeah, now we're talking Bruce's business.
It looked like 2015, 16 is when it kind of slid down, mm-hmm. but then they were saying the same thing, that the small craft mm-hmm. cideries, if we include that as kind of smaller ones, were still growing quite substantially.
Yeah. And I think you see that with craft beer too, is there's a focus on local, regional, and craft products. And you look at like the larger mainstream products, and they're stagnant or down or you know, struggling to figure out a way to increase.
I mean, you know, I can tell you, just personal experience. I mean, I did not have cider on tap at Patty Long's for many, many years. I didn't want to waste a tap handle with a non-beer product.
A lot of people are still on that wavelength.
Are they?
That's very common.
But now I see it. You know, I see cider handles. You know, it's almost ubiquitous. I mean, you know, you almost always have a cider on tap. So it kind of, you know, I mean, sure, it peaked, but it seems to me like it's here to stay. Like people go into a, you know, beer bar, whatever, a good drinks bar, and they expect to have a cider, I think. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, the younger drinking generation, the people that are, you know, just kind of coming into the arena of craft alcohol in general are more willing to take a chance on cider and experiment with different types of cider, whereas your older, more established drinker who knows what they like and like what they know may not. So I think there's a big opportunity for cider coming up.
Yeah, I mean, there's cider bars now. We have one in Chicago. Yeah, I think the first one I heard about was maybe in Portland or something.
There's one in Seattle.
Seattle.
Capital Cider in
Seattle. Yeah.
And then we went to one in San Francisco as well. So, yeah.
Quite a bit on the West Coast, yeah.
The one stat that really blew me away from Statista.com, which has got to be right.
Sure.
But it said that 6.8 million Americans tried at least one craft cider in the autumn of 2008, compared to almost 25 million Americans in the spring of 2017. So I think that, like, now that's not pure, that's just people having one. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was a pretty impressive stat showing the growth of cider. And I also read that the cider is younger and earns a higher income than a traditional beer drinker, which kind of piggybacks off of you, your comment there.
Yeah, I mean, I just know, yeah, younger people that are more willing to, you know, take a chance on something, I would probably assume that they have some expendable income if they're drinking craft beer or craft cider, you know, so.
And that's one of the reasons why we made an effort to price things the way we did, because when Charlie was started out, well, you can tell that story.
Sure. I mean, with our pricing model, it's like when I was working in a brewery and I wasn't making a whole lot of cash. I didn't have a whole lot of expendable income, and you know, I go out to bars or restaurants and I wasn't really able to afford to drink the beer I was making all night, you know? So our goal was always to price it in a way that it's affordable for people. And craft cider in general is not a cheap product. I mean, you know, as a bar owner, kegs are expensive.
They are,
generally speaking. Yeah. And
as far as manufacturing it, the price must be similar to making wine. I mean, juice is just more expensive than barley and malt and all that, right?
Yeah, the margins are not as probably not as as great as people think they are, but yeah, we make an effort to, you know, even though there are larger companies that make cider, we're trying to keep our prices in line with what they're charging. Now obviously there's some companies that have taken that to a whole new level, but we
what companies would that be?
I don't know. We won't mention them.
But we can't get in a price war with say, for instance, Budweiser or something like that. But we do try to keep it affordable, and you'll see even on the shelf where our pricing is always in line with the larger companies like Angry Orchard or Vandermill or say Virtue, for instance. We make an effort to keep it that way in Chicago because this is our backyard. And in Europe, if you go to England, it's like, well, it's made right down the street. Why is it so expensive? It should be cheaper. And I'm like, oh, that makes a whole lot of sense. And you come here and it's like, it's made right down the street. It's a craft product. It's $5 more expensive.
Yeah, right. It's like, right. That's absolutely true with pretty much anything, isn't it?
Yeah. I remember having that argument with Goose Island many, many moons ago because they were charging like Belgian prices for beers like Sophie and Matilda. And, you know, and Greg Hall's answer to me was, well, it's, you know, it's as high a quality product as, you know, as Orval and, you know, as, you know, Saison DuPont and all this. And I was like, well, you know, A, I'm not even going to get into that argument. But B, when I go to Belgium, it's $3 a pint there, you know, like it's dirt cheap. You know,
they're tacking
you
on the shipping all the.
You know, I should be paying more for a keg that traveled 6,000 miles than I should one that traveled 6 miles. But I don't know. It worked out for them, didn't it?
Yeah.
Turns out I was wrong.
Yeah. I'm not.
Although their prices have come way down since, but you know, he was right, Greg. You were right.
Yeah.
People will pay it.
But yeah, we're. at the end of January, going back to the data about cider, we're going to CiderCon again this year. It's in Baltimore, and we're really looking forward to seeing what's been, you know, going on. There's a number of legislative things that have happened. The Cider Association does quite a bit to help out with licensing. There's so many regulations with alcohol, from everything to ingredients to labels and all that. So we'll have some additional information in February after CiderCon for you.
And is they it, have oh, oh,
go no, no go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's it, which license do you have to get to make cider? Is it it's not a brewing license, right?
No.
Is we're, it the same as winemaking?
Yes. Yeah, we're a federally bonded federally and state bonded winery, technically, wine manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the first person who came to inspect our space, they were like, cider? Like they didn't even really know what to do with it. There wasn't a clear trajectory of how to license a cidery or how to have a bonded area. So it's like, but is it wine? Is it beer? And you see that kind of carry over into consumers even now as well.
Sure.
But everybody from the state and has been fantastic, but it was a little confusing to make sure we had the right license, that we weren't going to get shut down, that everything was smooth sailing. So it was interesting. He's like, I've never been in one of these before. And we're like, oh.
That's like, not what you hear from the person.
Like, is that good? Are you right. Are you going to approve us?
Yeah, to be honest, that is what you want to hear from
yeah,
us.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Do you need us to grow some grapes? What's going
sometimes
on?
Sometimes the less they know, the better it is.
Yeah. Now, you guys, did you move into the new facility? Was it this year or last year?
Last year.
Okay. And then... How is that in Hermosa? Is that right?
Yeah, so
in
it's
the Hermosa
on
neighborhood.
Yep, it's just a little west of Logan Square on Costner, between North Avenue and Armitage. It's in the old Schwinn bike manufacturing building.
Cool.
We have about 5,500, 5,800 square feet. Mm-hmm. So lots
do you guys
of room.
Offer tours or anything for the listeners?
We will be offering them very soon. So please follow us on social media.
All right.
We're updating that fancy website you were looking at is actually finally getting updated since we did that ourselves.
I love the website. Okay. I was like, it's such a breath of fresh air compared to the the like flashy BS that every website. Sorry, if you're going to that, by the way.
I'm we definitely are.
Okay.
It's the flashiest. Lots of pop-ups, lights.
Music plays as soon as you click it.
Totally.
Very refreshing to see a rustic website.
Yeah.
I sound like such a jerk. It's nice that you refer to it as rustic.
Other people don't.
Well, it's so as we grow, like, I did the logo in PowerPoint. Katie sketched the logo.
On a napkin.
I did it in PowerPoint.
That's
we did
awesome.
All the label design, the package design. The website.
We still hand paint the tap handles.
We did them all ourselves. I taught myself how to use Adobe Illustrator, and I figured it out. The website's a WordPress website, and I just sat there, drank a bunch of beer, and figured it out. You know, like, and that's been our process the whole time. So now we're finally in the position where we can like put some effort behind that.
Sure.
Branding, this marketing and branding thing, because people are just like, you should change your logo. You should revamp your package. You should redo
your
website.
People have a lot of advice.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm
oh,
like, yeah. We know what we should do. But
yeah, it's like we know exactly what we should be doing. And there's just steps that have to be taken. There are things that are on the back burner. They're, in a nursing term, things are triaged. It's like, okay, so what's the most important thing to do right now? And at that point, it wasn't having a flashy website. It was making a product and selling
making
it.
Making sure it was a good product.
Which is still the priority. Yeah, yeah. That's obviously still our priority, but we want to take the original design and make it, just improve it.
Yeah. And you can always tell those people who give you advice, hey, that's a great idea. I just need, you know, $500 or $100,000.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be done. No problem, you know?
Yeah. Well,
it speaks volumes to the product that, you know, you've had the success you've had with literally, you know, poor Katie on the street while she's, you know, working full time as a nurse. I've seen Katie in my bar in her scrubs, as she is right now.
I'm in my
by
scrubs
the way.
Right now.
She's in her scrubs right now. But that's how she comes, you know, into Patty Long. Says, hey, everything okay? You got, you know, I'm in between shifts. And then she's off again, you know. And you've still had the success you've had without the manpower, without the huge push. So, you know, all those things are going to come. And when they do, it's, you know, it's just up, up, and up. Right.
And then,
hopefully,
yeah.
Right. I said,
there's also a baby on the way, so we really need to sell more cider.
I know. You know.
All right.
We needed somebody else to help in the warehouse. That's the real reason for this baby.
It's like the old farms. You know, you need labor. Yeah. You gotta
cheap labor.
Yeah.
We'll be walking in a year.
Unfortunately, the first few years don't really work that way. Don't worry, kids. Nothing changes. You'll be fine. they're so screwed.
Well, congrats. That's awesome. That's,
bars and restaurants of Chicago, I'll be coming into your establishments with a child strapped to me.
Yeah, so. Now she'll be in scrubs with a hopefully, child and a baby Bjorn.
Hopefully that's okay.
Hopefully, right, be branded, baby Bjorn. You know, you gotta brand that.
Yeah, sure. If the baby Bjorn company is listening to this.
Yeah.
Right,
send,
be onesies are on the way.
Send us a free one.
That's so you're going to be doing tours. I think I read that a tap room might be in process, or is that
we're investigating that. We are that's another thing that was put on the back burner.
Sure.
But we're at the very least we're going to start with a bottle shop, but I want to see what the implications of a tap room are, since we don't have all the hot side equipment. We may not need the 18 million hour firewall that a lot of the breweries have to put up. So it all depends on what we can do and afford to do and have time to do. But
yeah, but we want people to be able to come in and see what we're doing. I mean, we are the local Chicago cidery, and there's quite a few people that don't know who we are. We want people to be able to come in and hang out with us and buy, you know, take a bottle to go and come meet us and hang out with us. So we want the space to be more accessible to the public. So we're working on that.
Yeah. It would make a nice little triangle if you had a bottle shop of, you know, Off Colors, but got a bottle shop right by you, Pipeworks right next to them.
Yep.
They have a bottle shop, right?
Yeah.
And then it would be you guys just a couple blocks away. It'd be a nice little run for the enthusiasts listening, right?
Yeah, we have people pulling on the doors quite a bit, and I never have the heart to really turn them away. And so we'll kind of, you know, show them, like, here's where we make it. Okay, bye. But I think they're it would.
So the interest is there, obviously.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And then you make, how many different styles of cider do you currently make, and what kind of plans do you have in the future?
Yeah, we currently package our two, well, the flagship, I guess you would say, would be the semi-dry. That's the one sweetened with a little bit of our honey. Then we just started packaging the dry as well, and that's no added sweetener. And then we've done a few draft-only collaborations, like here with the blueberry.
Yeah.
And then we did a hopped cider with Old Irving Brewing. We're working on another collaboration with Forbidden Root.
Cool.
Those are all going to be draft-only. We're also exploring the possibilities of mobile canning for seasonals and or rotationals, whatever the correct term is now. But for now, I mean, we are limited by manpower, and so we're really focusing on the semi-dry and the dry, but excited to explore options with collaborations.
And those two you can find in, like, Binny's and some of the...
Yeah. Binny's, Select Jewel Stores, Whole Foods, Treasure Island, Bitter Pops, Beermiscuous. Those are the ones I'm thinking of off the top of my head. Oh, if you don't see it, ask for it. It'll make us look really cool. Like, how come Ripey's not on the shelves?
We also have some science experiments that were like pet.
I did get to taste one of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
The aging one?
Yeah. The one in the tote that's funky.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have some.
The one that's been aging for like 2 years.
Yeah. We have some like wild fermented
stuff. Well, you're
stuff
still standing.
It didn't turn me blind. I'm good.
It's like, it's remarkably good for the fact that it's been pushed around all over the city, and like it's just, but it's
been by the. No,
it's a beautiful, it's a beauty of wild fermentation,
right? So. I mean, it does open a whole door there. You know, there is a tradition of funky ciders in Spain, right? I mean, I'm only scratched the surface
ciders.
Of, yeah, right, yeah. I mean, they're a whole nother animal, and you know, like I said, I've only scratched the surface of cider. I'm a beer guy, obviously, and. But I have had my eyes open to some unbelievable Basque ciders and Spanish ciders that it really, to me, have more in common with saisons than or lambics than you know, traditional ciders. So there's, you know.
Yeah, and I think with a bottle shop, that's something that we're gonna have to do anyways. It's like when we went to we had to do a very important business trip to Somerset, England, and we went to this place, Roger Wilkins Cider.
It was also our honeymoon that we took 2 years after we got married.
All right.
slash business trip, if Charlie wants to call it business trip.
But you walk into a barn with
that's how you write it off, Katie.
Yeah. Yeah. It was all business.
All business.
Tax man.
R&D.
R&D. But yeah, you go into a barn with cobwebs and cats running around and people sitting around smoking cigarettes, and they're like, do you want a dry, medium, or sweet? And you're like, medium. And then you get a little bit, a half of the dry and a half of the sweet, and now you have a medium. And they and
it was amazing.
Yeah, but
you should go.
But they have, you know, they have different offerings that you can offer people, and if we just have the two ciders, I don't know what the draw to this, the retail place is, but that's why we're kind of experimenting with some, you know, the opportunity that is presented with barrel aging and special releases and wild fermentation and some really weird stuff that people probably, having our two mainstream ciders, wouldn't really expect out of us. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, but those, the semi-dry and the dry, will always be the most readily available.
Okay,
that's for sure.
And untap at Patty. So
at Tap, yeah. Yes, both bars have the semi-dry on tap. I actually, you know, the dry is kind of new, and I hadn't actually tried it until we made that the blueberry cider together, and I was like, oh, I like it better. You know, I was contemplating replacing the semi-dry with it on tap, but I feel like I'd have a revolt on my hands. Of I have some very loyal customers for the semi-dry, so we carry it in a bottle, and I think it's doing all right. I think it's doing well, but it is it's my preferred cider now. You know,
I like that too.
Yeah,
no added sweetener at all, so it's great.
That's cool.
And it's not too, I mean, it's not bone dry. I mean, I've had some of those English ciders that are like so dry, they actually strip all the saliva out of your mouth. Yeah. And people like that, you
I
know?
Love
yeah,
those
yeah, yeah, a lot of people like
that. I do.
Yeah. This one isn't quite that, you know,
it's still approachable.
It's incredibly approachable. It's crisp, you know, which is what I look for.
Yeah, we bought the first two pints ever sold at Patty Long's, actually.
Oh, that's cool.
That is true. Yes, first place it was you guys were ever on.
We wouldn't let you sell it to anybody else because we were too nervous and we didn't know. We're like,
we have to go see it at Disney. Yeah. It worked out.
Yeah, we snuck it on tap the day before the release at Patty Long's, and then we had the release party here at Kaiser, which was a blast.
Yeah. It was. That's awesome. Was a blast, yeah.
Very cool. Do you guys think that, anything you're kind of keeping an eye out for in terms of industry, in terms of anything else for cider? Or?
No, we're
very consumed in our own business. Yeah, I mean, sure. People always like, oh, have you been exploring what's going on the West Coast? I'm like, I'm exploring what's going on in my living room, which is like, you know, business finance. I mean, we're so insulated in our own every day, the amount of tests
we don't get out much.
We don't get out much. But that's why, you know, CiderCon's really nice, because then you have kind of a blitz weekend of so much information that you're exposed to.
Yeah, tell us about CiderCon a little bit.
Sure.
I it's in Chicago every year?
Every other year.
Okay.
Which makes it really convenient for us. Huh. They do Midwest, East Coast, Midwest, West Coast.
Cool.
So it's pretty convenient for us every couple of years.
I went last year, and it was downtown, and I went to the first presentation on the morning, on the first day. It was a presentation called the Yeast Whisperer, and it's Shea Comfort. And he starts the presentation by saying, I've been studying bacteria and yeast fermentation for 16 years. I did beer for this amount of time. I did wine for this amount of time. And for the last 6 years, I've been studying apple fermentation. It has been the most frustrating and demoralizing 6 years of my career. And everybody's like,
we're like, you too?
Yeah.
Like,
everybody's like, oh, thank God. Like,
yeah. Finally, some brethren.
Yeah. So it was really eye-opening. We learned a ton about, you know, just the procedures and got a lot of just materials that we can refer to and met a lot of really nice people that, you know, we can kind of commiserate with now. So it was really beneficial for our company.
The collaborative community of beer in Chicago, I think, is fantastic. And we don't really have that yet in Chicago. So it's nice to go to events like that to be able to talk to people going through a similar situation.
There's also the Chicago Cider Summit on Navy Pier. Is that every year? That's just like a Okay. Yeah, like a trade show, right? Is
it, or, yeah.
Or not a trade show, it's, a tasting.
It's
right?
It's I think essentially a cider fest, beer
yeah.
fest.
Yeah.
We do many other events throughout that week, and we like to have our own events, but that event is not associated or sanctioned by the Cider Association.
Ah, gotcha. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up.
No, no, it's fine. It's an awesome event. Everybody should buy tickets. Yeah. Everybody should go.
Okay.
We won't be there.
The reason we won't be there, there's a table fee for the people going. Everybody's entitled to run their events however they want. The guy who runs that event's awesome. It's our company policy not to pay for tables.
Got it.
They do purchase product, which we love. We do events where people purchase product, but we are a tiny business with three people, and we don't pay for tables.
Got it.
So that's right. Why.
But
everybody should buy a ticket.
We are doing the Chicago Ale Fest, which is like the week before.
Yeah, put on by Lou Dog Events.
We'll
be doing that one at Navy Pier, as well as a number of other local Chicago beer fests. You'll be able to find us, and it'll be posted on our social media channels. Right.
Yeah, Josh is a good dude.
Yes, he is.
Lou Dog, cool.
Any more sore subjects you want to bring
up? Yeah, yeah. What else? What other dirt can you guys
give
us?
There's not a whole lot. Nothing,
yeah, yeah.
Maybe we should talk about Finch.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know.
What?
I liked how he skipped over his tenure at Finch's on the whole bio earlier.
Yeah. That was scrubbed from
Wikipedia.
It was brief.
It was brief. That was Charlie's first brewery job.
It was only 2 years.
Very brief.
The brewery that will not die. Okay. Well, moving on.
Yeah. Actually, I really, the beer that they've been putting out recently has been awesome.
It has been, awesome strong word,
but
it's good.
It very much improved. The guy who is the managing member now, his name is Jamie. He's a really nice guy. He's just they're just good people, and I like the brewers that are working there.
Yeah.
So,
no, I've heard all this. If Jamie's listening,
yeah,
change the freaking name.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I forgot I can curse on this one. Change the fucking name. Yeah. Okay. It's been sullied, you know, unbelievably in this town. And you are making some nice product now. Change the fucking name, man. You have a nice brewery. It's not far from Kaiser Tiger. But I will never carry a Finch product again, ever. I was burned so many times. And I think that's what the consumers feel in Chicago. So change the name, buddy. You know, do yourself a favor. Do everyone a favor. There.
Beer, hashtag
rant
beer opinions.
Over.
All right.
It is beer opinions.
But
yeah.
I think the best thing about those early years at Finch's, let me clarify, I never worked there, but I was dating somebody who was. The amount of talent that has passed through those doors and
this
moved on
yeah.
to bigger
yeah.
and better things has been amazing. I mean, people at Metro, people at Lagunitas, people starting, you know, what's the name of Andy's place in St. Louis?
Rockwell in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Well, he's at Perennial now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Goose Island. Like,
yeah.
a lot of those people.
Bo Forbes started there.
Yeah.
He's a master cicerone now.
A lot of people went through there and all over the country, too. I got a guy I used to work with in Miami.
Denver.
So, Denver, San Francisco. And these people I've
there was a lot of turnover.
Worked with
you could always get a job at Finch's.
Yeah,
yeah. They were the wine and Keller of the tooth of the aughts. Yeah.
When they took over, I was actually impressed by their beer at when they took over the it's now closed
break room.
The break room that brew pub.
You made it in there for those 2 weeks that they were in there?
Yeah, I didn't go.
Congrats. I didn't.
I was there. It was not full. Poor guys. But the beer was great. The beer was great.
Wow.
All right.
Anyway, lots of nice people moved on to
any,
better things.
Any more yes. sore
different
subjects
things.
You want
to
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of one. no, we're not allowed to talk politics.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
all right. So,
New England IPAs, thoughts?
Oh,
I'm just kidding.
Shut
wait,
up.
We,
that's pretty funny, actually.
No, we can
that
relate
another
to that.
Sore subject.
That's a banned topic.
We can relate to that a little bit. Just hear me out. Because when we first. Like we explained before, we had a lot of consistency issues. We were using space heaters. We didn't even know the actual temperature of the liquid that we were fermenting. So I still remember them like they're my children. It was batch 3. Looked like mud, but it tasted so good. I loved it. But
yeah, no.
It was really, I mean, it looked unlike anything, any cider that anybody had ever seen before.
Or beer.
Or beer at that time. And so people, you know, we it was within our, you know, the parameters we were developing at the time. It didn't have anything particularly off in terms of flavor or anything like that. It was just, it looked like it was so thick. And people liked it, and it was nice. And
I know. And I mean, I remember calling Charlie and being like, dude, yeah, this cider is like, you know, looks it's, like chowder.
It's opaque.
You know?
Yeah, it's
it bad. Tastes good. And, you know, and I was like all concerned about it. And then, you know, a couple days later, you know, we were talking and, you know, and I was like, dude, no one cares.
Yeah.
People think it looks great.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
We were bent out of shape too. I was worried about it.
I know.
It.
Yeah.
But
lost a lot of sleep.
Even in my brewing career, I never really put much emphasis on clarity.
Yeah, you didn't filter any of your beers.
No.
Right?
But
not many people do.
Yeah. But anyway, so we're having this huge, you know, issue. Some of the bar, there are people, some established bars in Chicago that didn't want to put it on because they didn't think their customers would like it. And these are some of the craftiest beer bars in the city because they thought it was too weird, too different, whatever. So we're fighting this clarity battle for a couple years. We fought this and
it took a lot of education. We're like, just try it. They're like, it's supposed to look like that. It's just different. You've never seen it before. Take a chance. And people would, and then it went over just fine. And then
so
fast
now
forward,
the New England IPAs are this whole thing. And everybody wants more haze, more haze, more haze. Like, and I'm like, where were you guys 4 years ago? and then so we finally.
And now, yeah, now it's not clear, but it's certainly
the one
not like
the next batch you get, it'll be even clearer than that.
Yeah.
And I got a picture text message from one of our accounts is like, is something wrong with this?
It's a little
this stuff
too
is
clear.
Is yeah, pretty clear.
It's
I'm
too,
like,
and now it's too clear. We're like, oh man.
Get out of here.
And we don't want it. We like the differentiation of a little haze, but, you know, as we moved into bottle, we have to have shelf stability. We want to be consistent. We've been working. I mean, it's the same recipe as it has been since the beginning, but we've made significant improvements in procedure and a variety of different things over the past few years. But, yeah, it's definitely changed a lot, and we think this New England IPA is so funny because we're like, we basically had a New England cider 4 years ago and people were just their heads would explode.
Yeah, this is the world we live in now where people are Chris Quinn from the Beer Temple told me someone returned a beer because it wasn't cloudy enough.
What? Oh my god.
This is the world we live in. This is Trump's America.
Millennials, man.
You know?
Yeah. Avocado toast and hazy beer.
Yeah.
Yes. Down for the haze, but it's just funny how things change. You know, something's mind-boggling until next week when it's trendy. And
I know,
you have
I know,
to get it, so.
I know. You know, I love those guys at Irving, Old Irving Brewery, yeah. And I love that place. I live near it, and I go there a lot, and they're doing a lot of hazy beers, you know. And it took all of my willpower on Facebook the other day. They had a picture of one of their hazy beers. And, I mean, it looks like a glass of orange juice, right? And someone commented, beautiful. I was like, what the fuck? Are we looking at two different things?
5 years ago, nobody would have ever said that.
Oh my God. I
like how most people get into fights on Facebook over like politics, but you're on there on the beer.
Yeah, I'm only fighting about beer. You know?
It's a good fight to fight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is actually a healthier fight.
Yeah, the last time I was on the radio, you know, I mentioned it to my mother-in-law. She's like, oh, you're going to be on the radio? What for? I'm like, what the fuck do you think for? you think I'm going on to talk about like socioeconomic issues in Asia or something? No, it's beer. I'm on for beer.
The tax code.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. But yeah, it's been an interesting. So we just turned three. Our business just turned three in November. And it's been a very interesting 3 years. And we have a lot of big goals for the future and a lot of changes I'm sure will be made, but it's just been, it hasn't been easy. That's for
Do
sure.
you guys get the same break on the tax code that the brewers are getting? The
I believe
50%
so.
Reduction.
Yeah. I need to read it more about it, to be honest.
We have a meeting with somebody much smarter than us this week or much smarter than me. I think.
Me too. It's fine. You
can. That's going to kind of
Thank you for
explain how that's going to affect us.
Yeah, I had that meeting last week. Sounds like it's going to help.
Yeah,
but,
I think it's going to ultimately help us.
Right.
Does that help the bars too? Or does it?
Well, it helps corporations. You know, I own four.
Oh, yeah, so, right. Yeah.
That significantly reduced my percentage of I pay in tax.
Yeah. All right, man. Just don't forget the little people. You
know? I forget who? Who are you?
I don't know who I am either. Holidays.
All right. Well, I think this is a good as place as any to end this.
We've aired our grievances.
We have aired our grievances. Festivus for the rest of us has taken place. Now is the shameless plug time, and let us know what if anything is going on, where you can be tasted and found, and all that good stuff.
All right. Well, tomorrow you can come see me at the Kingsbury Lincoln Park Whole Foods from 5 to 7. I'll be sampling our dry and semi-dry on Saturday, another Whole Foods sampling in Saugonash from 12 to 2. On January 5th, we have a bottles and cans tasting from 5 to 7. A lot of other beer fests and sampling events coming up, as well as our tour. So please follow us at Right Bee Cider, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and you'll be able to keep up with us. You can also email. You can message any of those social medias. We're the ones that see it. Or you can email info@rightbeecider.com if you have any questions or if you want to come visit. And you can go to Patty's and Kaiser to get your Right Bee Cider as well.
Oh, yeah, you can. Yeah. It is shameless plug time.
Yeah.
Bruce, what is going on with the Chicagoland beer tours?
Well, believe it or not, we are doing some walking outdoor beer tours because the weather's perfect for it. So I have, now I will say this, if you do buy tickets and it does happen to be as cold as it is, you'll get an email from me a few days before, which I just sent out, that will offer a reschedule refund. But we have a lot of people who are still doing it. So I have instructed my guides to buy the group, if they desire, a shot of their choice to help themselves in addition to the beer around the cold. So there'll be a lot of Malort shots, I think, on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, we're hardy folk in Chicago. Yeah. I mean, we've been busy as hell the last week. You know,
yeah.
People don't care here.
I mean, we live in Chicago. Might as well enjoy it, right?
That's right.
There's nothing you can do to prepare yourself for this. So you just have to get out there and do it.
Yep. Winter happens every year.
Yeah. So we are touring. That's the moral of the story. We'll be into Patty's on Saturday.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Good. All right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
My shameless plug, I'm still talking about our BCS event at Patty Long's because I'm cleaning out the cellar, and it is January 19th. It's a Friday. We'll have four different we'll have the regular 2017 and then three variants on tap. And then I'm bringing all the bottles up and they go all the way back to 2009. So, that should be a good one. I'm excited for it.
I think I'm going to come for that one. I'm going to put that in my calendar right
there
now.
You go.
Boom.
Done. All right. Well, thanks to everyone for listening. Remember, you can follow us at, I don't know, on Twitter maybe. I'm looking at our new, recording engineer over here who has no idea what I'm talking about.
We're not on Twitter, I don't think.
Oh, no? Okay.
But
I'm on Twitter.
We are on Facebook at Beer Opinions.
Then beeropinions.com is our website where you can download. You can also find us on iTunes and tell your friends. And if you enjoyed listening, share it with your loved ones. And have a happy new year.
Yeah, happy new year. Happy new year, guys.
Thank you
so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you, guys.